Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. A top official threatens South Sudanese radio stations who air live talk shows.
This is where you allow anybody to come and say his rubbish and pass these filthy ideas to the public.
And South Sudanese businesswomen are offered financial help and training so their small businesses do not shut down.
If I get any capital, I will deal in cakes, which I will place in a small kiosk that will serve school children and the entire neighbors.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A top South Sudanese official is threatening to shut down radio stations that host live phone-in programs that talk about South Sudan's political leaders or the future of South Sudan. Information Minister Michael McQuay told all radio stations to pre-record programs that discuss critical issues during live shows and warns the government will not tolerate what he calls filthy ideas being shared with the public. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
McQuay made the comments yesterday at a news conference in Juba, just hours before the arrival of the SPLM-IO's deputy leader, Alfred Ladugore, in Juba.
These direct on-air programs are not acceptable. This is where you allow anybody to come and say his rubbish and pass these filthy ideas to the public, and you will not be in a position to control it. I've been telling you that these such programs, I don't want them. Record your programs if you want.
McQuay advised radio stations to pre-record their programs to control comments that he labels unacceptable. The minister threatened to deal harshly with radio stations and journalists who do not abide by his orders, saying, quote, "When I say I will go with some of you, it means I am going out of this ministry and some of you will not be journalists because we will take you to the courts before I go away," end quote. McQuay wants to control how journalists report about the 28 states that President Salva Kiir created late last year. For example, he says media houses and journalists are referring to the governors of the recently created states as, quote, senior government servants, unquote, instead of governors. He cautioned journalists against referring to the 28 states as proposed states and says it is unacceptable for reporters to continue to use names of the previous 10 states.
I'm saying this because you must come to the line and you must toe the line. If you are a journalist, you must use the correct jargons of the government. You are not required to use your own terminologies, which you might have used out of ignorance or intentionally.
McQuay says journalists must respect the new reality of 28 states in South Sudan.
The government has redivided the 10 states and they have now become 28 states. You are under duty. You are under duty. If you want to quote the government, quote it as it is. Don't ride your own whims. These 28 states is not changing, whether the IO comes or it doesn't come.
McQuay ordered journalists to focus on the activities of the government rather than those of the SPLM-IO. McQuay's warnings are the latest in a series of threats to journalists since he was appointed information minister 3 years ago. The Association for Media Development in South Sudan, the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, the National Editors Forum and Media Women Today condemned McQuay's threats to the media. Oliver Modi is the chairperson of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan. Modi says McQuay's language amounts to harassment of the media and calls that is unacceptable.
The whole thing is sending a signal or message of intimidation, message of harassment of journalists in all that they are doing, and also message making journalists, you know, stopping their own efforts to make sure that media in South Sudan is developing to a level that can meet the international standard.
Modi says media houses are operating under journalistic principles and ethics, and as such, they need not to be told how to report on events by the government. He says, should there be any breach in the media protection laws that were passed by parliament and signed into law, the courts should address the matter. Modi also called on journalists to work within the context of the media laws in the country. He says the goal of journalists is to educate the public on developments regarding implementation of the peace agreement and to objectively report on efforts to restore peace in the nation. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
A local organization in the new state of Wau is training local businesswomen to improve their business skills. The organization, Women for Training and Promotion, says several small businesses owned by women in Wau are collapsing, due in part to their inexperience and inadequate capital. The group will also provide small business loans to help women grow their businesses or start small-scale enterprises. Dimo Silva Aurelo has more for VOA from the state capital, Wau.
More than 50 Wau area women operating small-scale businesses are participating in the training. Most of the women either sell tea or run restaurants or bakeries. Abda Abdullahi used to sell cakes, which Wau residents like to eat with tea. But Abdullahi says skyrocketing prices made it impossible for her to continue buying supplies, which pushed her out of business. With a little help, though, she is willing to try again.
If I get any capital, I will deal in cakes, which I will place in a small kiosk that will serve school children and the entire neighbors.
Abdullahi says she would bake and sell cakes because it is a business that requires little capital and is simple to operate and manage. Sarah Nicola, another participant at the training, also made and sold cakes for more than 2 years until she was forced out of business about 3 months ago when she could no longer afford to buy wheat flour, an essential ingredient in her cakes. Sarah says she plans to establish a different business if she acquires a loan from the women's training group.
I tried once where I could get £500 from a sale of one set. I stopped it because things are expensive, but now I can leave cakes and deal with bed sheets.
Sakunu Jerfas, who owns a bakery in Wau, says despite the tough economic conditions, she is still able to make a profit from her business. Jerfas says she has made a decent profit from selling bread, but she would like to establish a business that brings in a larger profit.
I'm trying now to start a restaurant. If WhatsApp gives me small loans to top up my capital.
WhatsApp, or Women for Training and Promotion, Director Linda Ferdinand says her organization is working to rescue female-owned businesses on the verge of collapsing. She says her group also wants to help women who have no jobs to start small-scale businesses.
We want to empower women who already have the skill of business so that they progress without remaining where they are. Sometimes women enter business only to solve some pricing problems without thinking of any progress.
Ferdinand tells the women that before they approve any loans, they want to equip them with the business skills they will need to manage their capital and grow their businesses.
During these 3 days, we will train you how to manage your business for continuity. Also, we will make sure you have the skill on how to plan with the little capital and in case of losses.
Ferdinand says the women who are able to manage the small business loans they are given will be eligible for bigger loans in the future. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
The Darfur administrative referendum is in its third and final day of voting, and the Sudan government says it will end according to schedule. Referendum officials said this morning that some 2 million people, or 60% of registered voters, had already cast their ballot. As Nabil Biaho reports from Khartoum, the government says the process has been free and fair.
The three-day exercise is supposed to determine how the region should be governed, either as one semi-autonomous region or continue as five states. General Adam Dalil is a senior member of Darfur Referendum Technical Committee. Speaking in Arabic, he says voter turnout has been good.
Today is the third day. We are experiencing even a larger flow of people as expected in the last day. Everything is going smoothly in the presence of local and international observers.
Dalil says the Darfur Referendum Commission has yet to receive any complaints and there have been no security-related incidents reporting over the past 2 days. He says the commission expects the situation to remain calm throughout Darfur's five states today. Dalil says some centers experienced low voter turnout on the first and second days, but he says referendum officials are generally satisfied with the turnout so far.
Tomorrow at 8 in the morning, we are starting the process of sorting and counting the ballots in all polling centers in the five states simultaneously.
Dalil says if all goes according to schedule, the referendum results will be announced within 10 days. Rabi Abdul-Ati, a prominent member of Sudan's ruling National Congress Party and an advisor to the Information Ministry, says it's clear that the Darfur administrative referendum has been a success.
More than 80, I think, as expected, 80% of those who registered to cast their vote in this administrative referendum.
Yesterday, Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry summoned the U.S. Chargé d'Affaires in Khartoum, Benjamin Meling, over a statement issued by the U.S. State Department late last week, saying the Darfur referendum cannot be considered a credible expression of the will of the people of Darfur and undermines the peace process now underway. Abdul-Ati questioned that statement.
Why, you know, United States of America administration, you know, not acknowledging the referendum which is running now? In spite of that, this referendum is one of the deserves of Doha peace document, and it is actually a commitment of the government to fulfill its promises.
The U.S. says insecurity in Darfur and inadequate registration of Darfuris living in internally displaced persons camps prohibit them from taking part in the referendum. The U.S. statement also asserts that lasting peace in Sudan will only occur through a political process that addresses the underlying causes of the Darfur conflict and secures a lasting cessation of hostilities. Abdul-Ati says the Sudan government wants to talk about other issues with the U.S., such as the roadmap agreement for peace in Darfur. Repeated calls to the U.S. Embassy in Khartoum for comment on what took place during the meeting between the U.S. Chargé d'Affaires and Sudanese foreign affairs officials went unanswered. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Yesterday, we reported that the U.S. government condemned the recent attacks by South Sudanese government forces, which destroyed a declared opposition cantonment site at New Matina in Wau County. Today, U.S. State Department spokesman Mark Toner said both sides have repeatedly violated the permanent ceasefire, and the U.S. and its allies are considering steps to take against both the government and the SPLAIO if the violations continue.
This is going on too long. That we're at a juncture here where it looks like they're sliding back into conflict and that both sides bear responsibility to put this thing back on track.
The South Sudan Army claimed it was simply adhering to the security arrangements put forth in the August peace agreement, while the armed opposition says it was acting in self-defense. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Two demining workers were killed in Yei yesterday. We'll have more on that story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the daily work of women in your community?
Women in my community are mostly traders. They go out to the markets to buy and sell.
They work at home, fetching water, looking for the firewood, looking after goats, because that's our duty, and taking care of the kids and the food at home.
My community and Benue State, where I come from in Nigeria, our main occupation is farming. So, of course, women goes to farm with their husbands, and some few women work in the government, and, of course, most of their duties is they stay at home and they are the head of the family.
Most of the women in my community own their own businesses and sell their own food. Some of them have convenience shops.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Yesterday, we told you about two people who were killed in Yei. Today, the Danish Refugee Council's demining unit says the victims were two of its workers. It says they were killed while heading to work by unknown gunmen along the Yei-Morobo Road. Maguma Davis Wakarinji has more for VOA from Juba.
Officials say a total of 7 mine workers were traveling from their base in Yei to their work location when unknown gunmen ambushed their vehicle in the early morning hours. Stephen Ladu Onesmus, Yei River State's Information Minister, says River County Commissioner Samuel Henry Malimbo witnessed the attack at Vilundi, about 1.5 kilometers from Yei town, as he and his bodyguards were returning from business in Uganda. Onesmus says the commissioner's bodyguards exchanged fire with a known gunman and managed to rescue 5 of the mine workers.
He stopped and he ordered his convoy, the escort, to go on foot. So they started moving on foot, and they had 2 gunshots. The third gunshots. Then they immediately passed to the area. When they rushed to the area, they saw people running. So they rescued the other group, they exchanged fire. So these people ran away. So they found 2 bodies down. These belong to the workers of the demining.
Tommy Hall, the head of Danish demining group, said in a statement that her organization is still evaluating the security situation in the area. She did not elaborate if they had suspended operations, but said security is top priority in their operations, and they constantly evaluate the safety of all areas of operation. Onesma says the government is still investigating the incident, but suspects the gunmen were highway robbers.
What we know since March, there are already 7 killings happening on the highways from Juba Yei Road and also from Yei Morobo Road. So most of the time, they ambush the people who are going to these satellite markets. We do have satellite markets in Yei and Morobo, where most of the women who are traders, they go and buy these food commodities to bring them to take them to Juba for a bigger market.
Onesma says both Yei and Morobo have fertile soil, but poor roads and insecurity often hampers farmers from transporting their produce to markets in Juba. He says the state authorities are trying to ensure security along this important road for traders and other commuters.
The government managed to put a highway patrol unit, which is actually patrolling the road so that the safe passages and seeing that there is no illegal or criminal behaviors happen on the road.
Despite that statement, criminal activity continues to occur along the road, especially in recent weeks. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Turning to Burundi now, the government there says since the beginning of the year, the country's simmering political conflict has killed scores of people and led to the arrest of more than 100 people. Violence began a year ago when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he'd seek a third term in office. Opponents say the move was unconstitutional. Moses Habyarimana reports from the capital, Bujumbura.
Targeted assassinations and grenade attacks have rocked the country for almost a year now. In the capital, Bujumbura, it's common to see 24-hour checkpoints and roadblocks as well as regular cordon and search operations in opposition strongholds. In a press briefing, the Minister of Public Security, Ale Bunyoni, says that 46 people have been killed for the last 3 months.
The terrorist group members have engaged throwing grenades in public places, especially in Bujumbura municipality, and on the eve of the visits of political dignitaries in our country. Since January 2016, these terrorists threw on defenseless civilians, women and children, in most of cases, more than 115 grenades.
The government says about 696 people have been detained on criminal charges since the beginning of the conflict over a year ago. Minister Bunyoni says this year alone, over 100 have been arrested for their alleged involvement in attacks on civilians. The United States Assistant Secretary, Bureau of Democracy and Human Rights, Tom Malinowski, recently visited Bujumbura. He says that the situation in the country on human rights remains extremely grave. He criticized the government for continuing to imprison members of opposition. Malinowski also says there has been an increase in forced disappearances and of credible allegations of torture of government opponents. In his remarks to the press, Minister Bunyoni again accused the neighboring Rwanda of trying to destabilize Burundi.
150 terrorist actors and perpetrators of crimes were arrested. They revealed the sponsors of these terrorist acts to be at the high level, hosted and supported by the Rwanda government. They reported having brutally murdered the three Italian nuns on the parish convent called Guido Maria Conforti of Kamenge.
Burundi's Justice Minister, Laurentine Kanyana, says that the judicial system is looking into the convent murders. She says, at the stage where they have been collected all evidences, that the security forces bring them and is one of the processes of investigation, but will only await for the judge to decide who is responsible. Violence continued this week in Burundi with attacks by unidentified gunmen on a market in the country's eastern Ruigi region near Tanzania. The French press agency says 5 people were killed and 7 wounded. The United Nations says over 400 people have been killed over the past year. The government says they include many ruling party supporters killed by opposition, a notion denied by government critics. Meanwhile, over 250,000 people have fled the country since political conflict began last year. From Bujumbura, I'm Moses Havyarimana for VOA Africa.
South Sudan could become the next new hotspot for coffee growing. USAID has promised more than $3 million in aid for a joint project with Nespresso and the nonprofit development group TechnoServe to revive the coffee industry in South Sudan, one coffee farmer at a time. And if you have had a bird's eye view of South Sudan, you would see miles and miles of green land, especially in the southern part of the country, where conditions are especially perfect to grow world-class coffee, according to William Warshauer, the CEO of TechnoServe.
What's surprising is, and most of the world has no idea, that South Sudan has some absolutely incredible coffee. Some would argue that it's actually the birthplace of coffee. It's obviously quite close to Ethiopia, which tends to be known for that. The problem is, of course, that the country has suffered from so much war over so many years that the industry has really become almost dormant.
USAID has pledged $3.18 million over the next 3 years to invest in coffee farmers in South Sudan. More than 700 farmers are already taking part in Nespresso's sustainable quality program, which focuses on green coffee sourcing while maintaining quality in each cup. TechnoServe, the Washington-based nonprofit, is leading this effort on the ground in places like Yei and Morobo, where the land is rich and fertile. Warshauer's goal is ambitious: train 15,000 South Sudanese farmers in the next 4 years. He says despite working in a conflict area like South Sudan, they are well on their way to attaining that goal.
What we've been able to do starting back in 2011 is to go in and help revitalize this industry, to work with farmers who have grown coffee, but whose many of them, their farms were burned during the war. They lost all or most of their trees, helping to teach them on some good basic agronomy practices that increases the yield from their trees, and helping to start local nurseries of this very special coffee tree that grows in this region to begin replanting so that the industry can be rebuilt. And that work has led to the first ever export of coffee from South Sudan to Europe.
Warschauer points out the project is much larger than coffee in and of itself. He says many South Sudanese have a real opportunity to build their future through coffee farming.
The income gains that farmers are seeing in this project are really substantial. Through the agronomy, they're able to increase their yields by as much as 200 or 300%. And then because Nespresso is buying the coffee when it meets their quality standards, they're getting, on top of the yield gains, a 40% price premium. And so when you combine the higher yield and the higher price, the extra money that the family is able to earn is really substantial and enough to really lift the whole family up out of poverty.
Warschauer is convinced that next to oil, coffee can be the second largest export from South Sudan.
And as long as there can be enough continued stability in the country, I'm utterly convinced that this can scale in a meaningful way and that more and more farmers can benefit from it in South Sudan and more people around the world can enjoy this delicious coffee.
USAID says this initiative is designed to triple coffee incomes. They believe at least 15,000 farmers will benefit from the initiative by 2019, and 25% of them will be women. USAID also says it plans to establish 9 cooperative-owned wet mills to boost productivity. We'll be talking with a coffee farmer who is taking part in the program and plan to bring that interview to you in the near future. Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. A top South Sudanese official is threatening to shut down radio stations that host live phone-in programs when the topic is the future of South Sudan, including the SPLM-IO. Information Minister Michael McQuay instructed all radio stations to pre-record such programs, warning that the government will not tolerate what he calls any filthy ideas being shared with the public. McQuay was speaking to reporters yesterday, just hours before the arrival in Juba of the SPLM-IO's deputy leader, Alfred Lado Gore. McQuay also wants to control how journalists report on the 28 states that President Salva Kiir created late last year. He says they should not be referred to as proposed states and to call governors senior government servants. Oliver Modi, chairman of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, says McQuay's remarks amount to harassment of the media and calls them unacceptable. The Darfur administrative referendum is in its third and final day of voting, and the Sudan government says it will end according to schedule. Referendum officials said this morning that some 2 million people, or about 60% of registered voters, had already cast their ballot. The government says the process has been free and fair, but the U.S. government put out a statement saying the voting process is not credible and that thousands of residents in IDP camps are not being allowed to vote. The three-day exercise is supposed to determine how the region should be governed, either as one semi-autonomous region or continue as 5 states. And finally, a local group in the new state of Wau is training local businesswomen to improve their business skills. The organization Women for Training and Promotion says several small businesses owned by women in Wau are collapsing due in part to their inexperience and inadequate capital. The group will also provide small business loans to help women grow their businesses. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Get Up by Emmanuel Jal.
Yeah. They say all walk and no play makes me a dull boy. But you know what I say? I gotta get up. Sometimes I feel like my life just ain't mine. I'm living out of my suitcase from one place to another place. Hey, I get a chance sometimes to sit down. I make a few dollars sometimes to I'm thinking I deserve a night in the town, having fun with my friends around. Hey, I gotta get up. Jungle, eyes on stars, I'm
We've been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song Get Up. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.